Welcome to The Vampire Squid, a podcast about increasing transparency and education in finance. This is your host, Sound Lee, and welcome to episode 16 of The Vampire Squid. I hope everyone had a good Labor Day weekend, and apologies for the late release, but I thought everyone is probably at the beach or having fun, so you guys can listen to this on your way to work tomorrow morning on Tuesday. Today, we're going to be talking about leveraged buyouts, and leveraged buyout is another form of valuation and modeling where financial sponsors mostly use this type, and a financial sponsor is typically just a private equity firm. So similar to the discounted cash flow episode, we're going to go over a leveraged buyout from a conceptual standpoint. We'll talk about some of the pros and cons of the valuation, and then we will also, if you're interested in more detail and how to actually model out a LBO, I will post links to a model and more detailed notes on the LBO analysis. As always, if you have any questions, comments, suggestions, please feel free to visit my website, thevampiresquid.com, and you can contact me there. And you can please also go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/thevampiresquid, for updates on anything and everything Vampire Squid. Okay, so the core of a LBO, the leveraged buyout analysis, is to determine a IRR, an internal rate of return. Basically, what this means is if you invest this amount of capital and in X amount of time you exit with this amount of capital, how much do you make over this period and how do you calculate that? So for example, if I was to sell something for $100 and I bought the item for $50, I would make 100% on my investment, assuming there's no debt and I just bought everything with my own cash, and when I sold it, it was for all cash as well. So before we dive into how an LBO works, I think it's important to talk about the drivers of an LBO. So some of the drivers of an LBO, and when I say drivers, I mean these are the things that influence the IRR or your return the most. So that the first thing is your purchase price, how much you pay for the business. So if you invest $10 into a business and sell it for $50 versus if you paid $5 for the business and sell it for $50, you have a different rate of return. The lower your purchase price is, and if you have the same exit price, then you'll have a higher rate of return. Next, another driver is your debt and interest. This is also known as leverage. So back to that same example, if you purchase a company for $10 and you only have to use $5 of equity and you can use $5 of debt, and you sell the business for $50 versus if you buy a business for $10, all of your own cash and no debt, the amount of return that you get is higher when you use debt because you have put up a lower amount of equity. One caveat though is that if your interest payments are too high, then this could actually lower your rate of return. So it's not always when you use debt, you'll have a higher return. But usually your cost of debt is lower than your cost of equity, so you will have a higher rate of return. But in some cases, if the debt interest payments are too high, then this could actually lower your rate of return. Next, the interest rate on the debt is also important because throughout the lifetime of the company, you have to pay down the interest on the debt as you own the business. Next one is operational synergies. And operational synergies are things that will improve the margins on the business. So if you can increase your EBITDA or your EBIT margins, then you generate more cash flow for your business. Other things are if you can increase your revenue, then you'll also theoretically generate more cash for your business, assuming other costs are the same. And finally, the exit price is also another driver of an LBO. And the exit price is how much you sell the business for. If you sell the business for more, you'll get a higher return. If you sell it for less, you'll get a lower return. And there's also other things that drive the LBO for your returns that include things like a dividend recap. I think that's a little bit nuanced, so we don't have to dive into that now. But if you're interested, I'll post show notes to how a dividend recap works as well. So now let's walk through an LBO conceptually and how it works and how you set it up. So as mentioned before, an LBO is typically done by a private equity firm. And you can do an LBO of a public company or a private company. But for this one, we'll just use a public company, so it's a little bit easier to walk through. Usually when a private equity firm is looking to buy a large company, they will, on average, put up anywhere between 30 to 50% equity, and the rest of the capital for the business, 50 to 70%, will be in debt. And when I say equity, it means the firm's capital. So the private equity firm's own money. And when I say debt, I mean they go out and raise this debt. So 50 to 70% of debt and 30 to 50% of equity is usually the breakdown of how much debt versus equity private equity firm will use to purchase a company. So for example, if a company costs $100, for our example, we'll say that it uses 50% debt and 50% equity. So $50 in debt and $50 of the private equity's own capital. Also, a typical hold period for a company through an LBO is usually anywhere between 4 to 6 to 7 years. I mean, things can also be earlier, things can be later, but usually on average, people want to hold it for around 5 years. But there's definitely many cases that happen, you know, before or after, depending on, you know, market scenarios or potential buyers of the company and other conditions that may force an earlier or a later sale. So basically, you purchase this company for $50 equity, $50 debt, and you'll need to model out the business for the next 5 years. So now to model out the business, you basically build an operating model for the next 5 years. But some of the changes that you'll make to this operating model are potential revenue synergies and cost synergies that will happen throughout the LBO. You could forecast a greater increase in revenue. Maybe you have some portfolio companies in your existing portfolio that you think you can leverage some of the distribution channels. On the cost side, there could be equipment or even employee costs that you think the company could, you know, do better without or operate more efficiently with. And then also you have to model in this new debt payment because we have 50% of debt now of the company, or $50 of debt, and assuming like a 10% interest, we have to pay another $5 of interest each year. So you'll have to model that in. And at the end, you have this five-year model for your leverage buyout. And at usually around this time, you'll assume an exit. Typically, an exit is calculated off a multiple of EBITDA. So for our example, in the beginning, when we bought the business for $100, we can assume that it had $10 of EBITDA, and this would be a 10 times multiple of what we entered in. Typically, we want to use the same entry and exit multiple to be fairly conservative because we don't want to model in multiple expansion because who knows what's going to happen 5 years down the line. Things can go up or things can go down in terms of market conditions. But now let's say after the 5 years, our EBITDA for the company has grown to $20 instead of $10. And this has grown to $20 because of the increased revenue, the lower costs that we've achieved, and at the end of the 5 years, it's grown to 20. So now we assume a 10 times multiple on the $20 of EBITDA. Now our business is worth $200. But remember, we don't get all $200 of that because we had that initial $50 of debt. For this example, let's just say we didn't pay down any of the debt and we still have $50 of debt remaining. So the equity portion that the private equity firm gets is the $150. So from a MOM or a COC standpoint, and MOM just stands for money over money, COC stands for cash on cash. These are just some of the terms that private equity firms like to use. But from an MOM standpoint, you take the $150 and you divide it by the $50 initially that you had to put up of your own equity. So in this case, it's three times. Our MOM is 3x. So since we held it for a 5 year period, a 3x MOM translates to around a 25% IRR. And an IRR can be calculated using usually a calculator or an Excel formula. But basically it is to see how much did that $50 grow each year to become $150 at the end of 5 years. So when I say a 25% IRR, basically, the way that it works from a year-by-year standpoint is you have the $50 in year one. You grow that $50 by 25%, so around $60+. You take that and grow it by 25% over 5 years, and you'll reach to around $150. I think it's a little bit over $150, but from an approximation standpoint, it's around 25%. And that is your IRR that you've calculated. Firms will typically look at it from an MOM and an IRR standpoint. How much money and cash did they get back from a quantum perspective? And what is the rate of return that they got over the 5 years? So typically an LBO analysis is used to determine if a project is worth taking. So if you can only generate maybe a 5% IRR based on your calculations, based on the purchase price, exit multiple, synergies, this is probably not a deal that you would want to do. But if you have a 30% or a 40% IRR, this is maybe something that's a little bit more attractive because the returns are pretty high. So now let's think about, you know, what type of companies do private equity firms usually look at to do an LBO? What makes a company a good LBO candidate? You know, based on what we just mentioned, some qualities that make a company a good LBO candidate is if it has very stable and recurring cash flows. And this is because since you're taking on a lot of debt, you need to pay off the interest payments each year. And you don't want necessarily a very cyclical business that has varying cash flows each and every year, because sometimes you might not be able to make your interest payments and your company will go into bankruptcy. Also, you usually want a company that already generates a fairly good amount of cash flow. You don't necessarily want a business that isn't cash flow positive. So more of the early stage internet companies may not necessarily be a good candidate for LBOs because they're still reinvesting into their company. They're growing really quickly and not focused on earnings. So on the opposite end, you usually want companies that are very stable, more of the legacy companies that have a fixed growth rate, fixed earnings each and every year so that it's very predictable. Another candidate that is good for an LBO is somewhere that you think is some business that you think you can cut costs and generate a lot of synergies from. There might be a lot of redundancy in some of the operations of the business where you think it could operate more efficiently. You think there are other distribution channels that the company can go into, which you have the connections and the power to leverage. And finally, I think one of the other good qualities of a good LBO candidate is a company that doesn't have very high CapEx. The cash is very important because you need to make your interest payments, and the cash is also how the private equity firm generates the returns. So you don't want a business that has very, very high capital expenditures each year because it could be tough to make your interest payments and it could diminish your returns for the private equity firm. Now, some of the most famous LBOs that you guys have probably heard of in the past 10 or so years are the Michael Dell's and Silver Lake's LBO of Dell. This was around a $25 billion LBO where they took Dell private from the public markets. Another famous one is Hilton's Hotel by Blackstone. That was around $26 billion. And another famous one is Nabisco, RJR Nabisco by KKR for $31 billion. So I think that is a good high-level overview of an LBO. And I think that another parallel that I want to draw before finishing up this episode is an LBO is not necessarily a very complicated type of valuation. From a real-life perspective or a real-life example, buying a house is essentially an LBO. If you're buying a house for $100, the bank will need you to put down 20% of the down payment, and this is called your down payment. So you pay $20 up front, and then you get a mortgage on the rest of the $80. And throughout X period or X number of years that you own the house, you start to pay off interest and the mortgage each and every year. And by the end of the period, you could either sell the house and you've paid off quite a bit of the mortgage, or you can pay off the mortgage completely and own the house at the very end. This is very similar to how an LBO works. A private equity firm puts 30 to 50% of the quote-unquote down payment, They pay off the interest and they pay off the debt each year. So they own a bigger share of the company or the house. And over the next 5 years, at the end of the 5 years, they'll want to sell it. So all the drivers of an LBO, the purchase price, the exit price, these are also related to buying a home. If you buy a house for a little bit cheaper and sell it for higher, you get a higher return. It's not from a conceptual standpoint, LBOs are not complicated. It is a little bit nuanced when you go to model an LBO, but just from understanding it from a conceptual perspective, knowing some of the drivers of an LBO, I think it's fairly straightforward and not too different from how a normal operating model works. So as mentioned previously, if you guys are interested in getting a little bit more nuanced and nitty-gritty into how to actually model the LBO and some of the other nuances of how an LBO model works, I will post show notes and links to an actual LBO model and a more detailed explanation. But I hope this episode was a bit helpful. And as always, if you have any questions, comments, suggestions, please feel free to visit my website, thevampiresquid.com. And you can always email me at Alan, A-L-A-N, at thevampiresquid.com. And please also check out my Facebook page and give me a like, facebook.com/thevampiresquid. Until next time, thanks so much for listening, and ciao.